You're listening to the Illustration Hour podcast, an interview podcast where I talk to illustrators, art directors, and agents about the craft and business of illustration. My name is Julia Dufossé, and I'm an editorial and commercial illustrator based in Chicago. And I'm chatting with creatives within the world of illustration to learn about their process, the challenges they faced along the way, and how to succeed as an illustrator today. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Illustration Hour, the show about people who create for a living. I'm your host, Julia Dufossé, an illustrator working out of Chicago. I'm talking to you from a very snowy Chicago. I've just finished up an editorial commission, which I should be able to share with you soon. And this week, I'm very happy to bring you a brand new interview with the illustrator and artist Eleanor Taylor. But before I introduce Eleanor, did you know you can get exclusive news on the podcast, including sneak peeks of future guests and roundups of opportunity, resources, and essential news for illustrators and designers delivered to your inbox each week? Go to illustrationhour.com/newsletter to find out more and join the club. It's 100% free and you can unsubscribe at any time. And you can always hit reply and talk to me directly if you have questions or comments or suggestions. I always answer these messages before I do anything else, so you get priority access plus all the best things I've found to help you thrive as an illustrator just for being a subscriber. So go on and join the club at illustrationhour.com/newsletter. Okay, so on with the show. Eleanor Taylor is my guest today. You can find her work on her website at eleanortaylor.co.uk or on Instagram at Eleanor's Visions. That's all together. Eleanor is an artist and illustrator who works from Hastings in the UK. Eleanor has a BA in illustration from Norwich College of Art and an MA in Communication Arts and Design from the Royal College of Art. Her work is highly praised and regarded amongst book publishers and editorial circles, and she has worked with tons of prestigious publications, including Penguin, The New York Times, The New Yorker, The Guardian, The Wall Street Journal, NBC, and many more. Eleanor's approach to image making is influenced by her love of paper and printmaking. She works either by hand, using a mixture of watercolor, gouache, and colored pencils, or more recently, digitally, using a combination of Procreate and final touch-ups in Photoshop. The results are beautiful mixed-media illustrations replete with thoughtful details and ingenious color combinations. In this conversation, I asked Eleanor about her path to illustration, and she talked about how her style and voice evolved into a more graphic approach to image making over time. We talked about Eleanor's favorite Procreate brushes, how traditional media like watercolor and gouache informed Eleanor's approach to digital tools, how Eleanor promoted her work in the very beginning, and what she has to say about working with different sorts of clients from different industries. I really enjoyed talking about Eleanor's journey, and I found it inspiring and encouraging to hear about her path. And I hope that you will as well. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Eleanor Taylor. Eleanor, thank you for coming onto the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I was so happy to actually to be reminded of your work, and somebody recommended you directly for the show, one of your fans. Ooh. I'm really happy to have you on.
Wow, I feel very honored, but yeah, I'm excited. I've never actually done a podcast before, so this is a bit of a first for me, but I'm looking forward.
Yeah. A lot of illustrators, actually, like when I first talked to them, they've never done a podcast, or I guess they've done written interviews more because that's more common in the industry.
Yes.
So yeah. I would like to start off the usual way that I usually start off, which is just asking you how you usually describe what you do to other people, especially people who are not illustrators, I guess, or creatives.
Oh gosh, this is where I feel like I've got to have like a proper little spiel going on. But I don't know, when I say I'm an illustrator, people usually think like, oh, I do, you know, they're like, oh, cartoons or children's books. So the way I describe it is that I basically, oh, sorry, my head's gone blank. Are you asking about style or about illustration?
Yeah, I guess. Oh, that's totally okay. I mean, I guess the point of it is really that I think a lot of us struggle to describe what it is that we do, especially when people ask,
yes.
Because it's something that I think for people who are not in the creative industry, they don't necessarily understand what it is that an illustrator does or how an artist might make money.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So I guess that's how I would like, yeah. How do you usually explain that to people?
So I just say, hey, I'm an illustrator. So that means that I work mainly in sort of for newspapers and magazines, and I illustrate book covers, and I've worked on picture books. So yeah, and I also make my own work as well. And sort of sell my own prints and cards. So, yeah, I kind of have my fingers dipped in a lot of different pies, I would say.
Yeah. Do you usually describe yourself as an artist or as an illustrator when people ask you? Have you noticed which you tend to use?
Yeah, I say artist and illustrator. And I do separate those two things. And part of me wishes that, like, they were maybe more like, I don't know, it was just, I could blend those two worlds together a bit more. But yeah, I would say I'm an artist and an illustrator.
How do you see the separation between those two things? Like, I mean, I guess in a concrete way, like, why are they really separated in your mind?
Well, I suppose my illustration, I'm working for a client and I'm working towards a brief, and there's usually a time constraint. Mm. And usually you have to have a kind of like rough idea of what you're going to make and produce and how the image is going to look. And I'd say when I'm making my own work, it's much more about the journey, more perhaps than the final result. Although I do try and sometimes put sort of time constraints on myself so I can make work and sort of, yeah, produce things. I think it's, yeah, you can sort of explore and sort of, yeah, explore your practice more, I guess. Mm-hmm, whereas with illustration, it's so much more pressured. I mean, quite often I'll only have, you know, a matter of hours or maybe up to a week if I'm lucky to produce a piece. But yeah, with my own work, it's just so much more personal. And yeah, obviously I can sort of decide what I want to do and I haven't got someone telling me.
Yeah, so I read on your about page that you went to school. I guess you went to get a bachelor's in illustration first, and then you went back to school and got a master's in communication art and design.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to go back to school after your bachelor's degree?
Well, it was funny because, I finished my bachelor's and I wasn't even sure necessarily that I wanted to be an illustrator. I kind of felt like at the end of my degree, in the third and final year, that I was sort of finally sort of gaining traction with my work and like knowing, kind of getting an idea of what I wanted to explore. And I was just sort of so eager and hungry to learn more. And in fact, like, I ended up applying because in my third year to go on to do the MA, and I didn't actually get in. So I ended up moving back home and working for a year just like I worked in the supermarket and then in the school. And I mean, it was a really tough year, but I spent sort of any spare time just working on my portfolio. And then I applied again and got in. And I mean, it was just, if anything, it didn't really teach me about illustration necessarily as a career, but it was more about sort of opening up my mind and having like all these amazing influences. And yeah, it was, the experience was like really incredible. But yeah, I think, yeah, I'm losing my...
No, you're not. You're not, yeah. No, you're doing perfect. I guess I'm wondering like what it is that you really wanted to learn more of. Like, was there something that you were missing from your bachelor, I guess, your illustration degree?
Yeah, I suppose it's funny now because I think we always had the internet, but I felt like things were so much harder to find out about, like sort of films and books and other artists and even like learning about illustration, it was such a closed off and like mysterious world. And for me, I wanted to explore sort of my drawing practice more. I wanted to explore working on like narratives, and mainly actually it was just about meeting other people with like from different walks of life with different ideas about things. Like when I was at the RCA, we'd have these like film seminars. So you would just go in the evening and sit for a couple of hours and just watch these incredible sort of, incredible films that, you know, I would never have heard of or have found out about just sort of by myself, really. I felt like my mind was opened, having all these different influences pumped into it, like these different artists, even like we had sound seminars as well. So it was like you would go and like listen to like amazing music for 2 hours. And, you know, it was, I think what I got the most out of the RCA was basically the people that I met and basically the influences, like the books, the films, the music.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, it sounds like really for you, the important part was the stimulation and the creative environment. Yeah. So, and it sounds like your second program was at least more directly, like it was less directly actually about illustration, and it was more of a general communication program, right?
Yeah, definitely. And in a way that really suited me because I always felt like I was kind of on the fringe of like, not being a fine artist and not being like a full-on commercial illustrator. So it kind of sits in this weird sort of place in the middle. And the way the illustration course was run was, well, it wasn't really an illustration course, but I felt like I could sort of slot in there. And yeah, it's a little undefined, I suppose. And then that kind of, which can be good and can be bad, I think. But yeah.
Why didn't you, why didn't you pursue a more like a fine art direction? Was there a reason that you didn't? Or?
Oh, it's really tricky. I think.
Because I think your practice kind of lends itself to that as well.
Yeah.
But it's sort of interesting to me that you, it's not, I guess it's not that it's in any way bad or anything. It's just, I'm just wondering because I think fine art tends to be a little more closed off in a way. And it's really well defined what a fine artist is in a way.
Yeah. And I don't know. I felt like getting into that world is so, so tough. I have friends that are artists and I just didn't find it the most open and perhaps welcoming of worlds.
I also
felt like because my work slightly, I was interested in narrative and stories and my work was illustration-like, I felt like I mean, this probably is my own beef, but I felt like I would be looked down on, or yeah. I don't know, like not serious enough or not like conceptual enough as well. Although excitingly enough, I think there now is a return to painting within the art world, which is really great. But I, again, I felt like I was just on the edges. And to be honest, there was another, another side of it is that it's like, you know, you're just on your own with, I felt like as an artist, it's very hard to make a living. You kind of have to, I mean, I did this at the start of my, at the start anyway, you know, I was always working in shops and like I always had a job on the go. And I think if you're a fine artist, you kind of like can't, I mean, you know, there are only very few that can really like make a living from their work. So it's sort of, you know, you have to put in like 50, 60, 70% of your time just trying to make the money to then be able to afford to make your own work. And it's exhausting. And I did like after a year after leaving RCA, I lived in London, and I, to be honest, I just couldn't hack it. I lived in a very cheap, cheap by London standards.
Yeah, because London also isn't the cheapest.
Oh my gosh, it's so expensive. I lived in Tottenham, and I moved in just after the London riots, and I moved into this sort of old factory. And it was one of these live work studio situations, but it was really kind of not very nice, a bit run down. There was a mezzanine floor where I had my studio. And then we had like a big sort of like kitchen living room below. And then I shared it with a friend. And then we had these like tiny little airless box rooms where basically I just had like a blow up bed. And then, yeah, we cooked in a microwave and on one of these like tiny little two like hob sort of plug-in stoves. So it was almost like we were camping. And then, I basically went to work, and I sort of, I worked as a teaching assistant in a school for pupils with like challenging needs. And actually it took me an hour and a half to get there and an hour and a half to get back. And obviously the pay wasn't great. And I just felt so exhausted that finding the energy to put into my work was just really tough. That was a really hard year.
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did get into a couple of shows, and I did make my work, and I've always made my work. But I think the other thing is that I just hate working for other people. So I ended up leaving London and moving to Brighton with my partner. And I worked, I worked a few jobs. I worked in a shop and everything. And I remember just feeling like always a bit resentful, like, oh, I really hate this job, you know. And because the other thing is that, you know, I was always, if you want to be making your own work, then you can't really take on like really well-paid jobs that take up loads of time. It has to be like stuff, easy kind of work that you don't take home, but that's always going to be not very well paid. But actually it was interesting because I ended up working in this shop in the Lanes in Brighton, which is kind of like, well, it's got a bit fancy now, but it was kind of like more of a creative quarter, I suppose, of a lot of independent shops. Mm-hmm. And I ended up working for this lady who had worked in the fashion industry, and then she'd set up her own small sort of boutique selling like textiles and prints and homeware. And some illustrators would like sell their work there, and I remember just thinking, oh, I'm so jealous, I wish I could be doing what they're doing, you know. And I'm sitting in the shop making notes and trying to figure out how I can sort of get out of here. Yeah
In a way, I guess that's, in a way, you learned a lot from that thing, from that a different way of making money. Think a lot of illustrators can empathize with that. I mean, a lot of us really want to be working for ourselves, working freelance for clients, but not full time, and not
definitely
not have a job that you have to make a living. It's definitely a tough position to be in when you have to share your time between that and what you really want to do.
For me, it's the perfect balance of doing both. I love making my own work, and I love working for clients and have building on those relationships and sort of. I think working in shops and working in other jobs was just very frustrating, but it sort of pushed me into, becoming freelance, I guess. It gave me the boot and, made me want it even more.
Yeah, I want to talk a little more about how your style and your voice evolved, because you have a really, really distinct style now. And like many illustrators, I'm sure you had some struggles to get there, and like it took a while to figure out what it is you wanted to say and how you wanted to say it and all that stuff. So when did it begin to crystallize for you that you were going to work in a certain way?
Yeah, it's so hard. I think I've always struggled with that idea of style. Mm. I think the trickiest thing as an artist or an illustrator is looking at your work objectively. Mm-hmm. And I think I've always had sort of the same influences on my work, which is, predominantly film and sort of books, these sort of things just seep into my work. But I suppose it wasn't really like until I ended up like moving to Brighton, as I say, and I started getting like a couple of jobs. And I think I remember spending like a really good month just figuring out how I could sort of take on a project and follow it through, like take on an illustration and follow it through.
Yeah.
Because basically it's a bit weird, but like up until that moment, I'd never, so for like years, basically, and even when I was doing my MA, I just never used colour.
Okay.
And everything was completely monochrome. I mainly worked in pencil. I didn't really touch computers.
Surprising because your use of color is like, I don't know, I would describe it as very like, you seem very comfortable with color now.
Well, it took ages to get there. And I think it wasn't until like the 2 years after my MA and I started working in that little shop in the lanes, and my boss just had this amazing idea, way with color. And the way that she would put like sort of acid yellow scarves against sort of blue lampshades and things like this. And the way that she played with the colour in the shop, I would just be sitting there all day kind of bored out of my skin. And I just ended up, I think, absorbing all of that.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I figured out a way of making images that could be more graphic for my illustration portfolio. And I really wanted to bring colour into my work because, as I say, up until that time, it was just all pencil and like, and I started figuring out like, okay, so the easiest way to bring colour in is just maybe like not to go crazy, just look at two colours, colours from that complement each other, and I think like blue and orange or something like that. So I remember getting out my light box and working on, I think I can actually remember the first image that I did, which was this weird underwater scene of like a woman with a fish's head.
Okay.
And she was like completely naked, and then she had a fish's head, and I decided just to use like blue and orange, and that I would make up this sort of, I would work on this image. So I got out my light box and I built the image up like a screen print.
What medium did you use for that first time?
At that stage, I think I just used like a pen, like a Pilot G-Tech pen. I love those pens. And then I used a pencil. and
like coloring pencils?
Just black and white pencil. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Just the black pencil. And yeah, so everything was just monochrome, and I basically just figured out a way of turning like textures and like scanning in textures and turning them into colors in Photoshop. And it took me so long to figure it out. And I watched so many videos and like researched it, because I really wanted to put color into my work, but for so long I'd try and use the magic wand tool and that looked dreadful, and I just couldn't figure out how to do it. And I think as soon as I figured out, like, it took me about 3 or 4 months of just like constant like sort of, you know, work. And then once I figured it out,
feeling dissatisfied,
once I figured it out, this process, it kind of just sort of twigged, and I had a workflow, and then I could stop worrying about it, you know, and I could just concentrate on the subjects rather than the process. I mean, obviously I love experimenting and playing with that, but it was really nice to like finally figure that out.
Yeah, I can absolutely empathize with that. I had a pretty similar experience where, like, once you figure out the process or your workflow for producing work that you're going to sell to people, it's like, it's a huge weight comes off of your shoulder, I feel, as you realize that, because it's so
definitely
stressful when you feel like you want it to look a particular way, but you can't make it look like that. I guess in a way that's repeatable.
And I remember always feeling that frustration throughout like the whole of university and everything, just like, oh, I just couldn't get the work looking how I wanted it to, you know. And then finally I just had that breakthrough moment, and it started to look more polished and graphic, and that was just like making my own work. And then once I started putting that up on Tumblr, then I think that's where it got sort of seen in the end by an art director.
Yeah, a lot of people who I guess started around the time that you started were using Tumblr. It was like really big then.
Instagram I don't think was around, so it was all about Tumblr. And I don't know if you remember, like, Illustration Mundo. Do you remember that? Is it Illustration
Mundo? I do
Mundo?
Not know there no because like, I wasn't no, part of the, that world then.
There was like a big database of different illustrators. Started by Nate Williams, and you could sort of put your portfolio on there. And I think a lot of art directors used that. And he'd sometimes do an illustrator spotlight of the week, and then you'd get an interview. So that was really helpful. I remember that back in the day. That was like blogs.
Yeah, I guess now it's nice that that's become huge, and there's a couple of other like smaller ones, but yeah. And do you remember around that time if you started to reach out directly to art directors or promote in any other way?
So basically, I don't think I got any work through promoting. It was basically just from my Tumblr and putting things online and literally doing a few, like 2 or 3 interviews on some of these blogs. But in terms of promoting myself, I mean, it was always drilled into us, send out postcards and all this kind of thing. And I did, like, I remember getting some postcards printed and sending them out, and I never heard anything back. So, and I was always feeling, I always felt like funny about cold emailing someone. And also the other really tricky thing was like just knowing the art director's address. And I suppose it takes a bit of sleuthing and detective work, but, and I think it's much easier to find people now because
it is,
just Instagram.
Is it much more present?
And actually I wouldn't think I would cold email people now. Like, I don't know what it was that was holding me back. I just felt like, uncomfortable doing that, which is stupid. But I felt like it was less in your face if I just sent them, you know, a postcard. But that for me just really didn't work.
I mean, either way, there's really no way of knowing what exactly gets you work in the end. Like, if it's these indirect kind of channels or they saw a postcard and remembered you or do you remember what your first commission was or?
Oh, so yeah, my first commission was for an in-house publication for, I think it was for Nokia, but I don't know if Nokia are owned by Orange.
Oh, and yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they were giving it this like in-house publication to all their employers. And it was sort of talking, it was like this little book and lots of different illustrators had work in it. And it was sort of talking about the history of Nokia, I think.
Okay.
Or its values, its brand values. And I remember I ended up doing a couple of illustrations for them. And that was my very first job, but it was actually quite well paid. And I remember that it finally twigged me that, oh, maybe this could be something. Because up until then, I'd always been like, can anyone ever really earn money from being an illustrator?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't
mm-hmm.
really know any illustrators. And I was like, is this just like a ridiculous, like glorified lifestyle or something? Like, I don't know, like being an artist, like, can you actually make a living from this? Or am I always going to have to work in this shop and just do this on the side? And then, when I got some money for it, and I was like, wow, okay, maybe this is a reality.
It turns out you can,
be possible. Yeah, and I remember that being a really exciting moment. And so that was my very first job, which,
Do you remember how it went? Did you feel successful at it or?
Do you know what I did? I remember I was in the early stage of having figured out my workflow and process, putting in the colour and everything. And I remember really enjoying it and working on these two illustrations. And I think they turned out really well. But the most frustrating thing is they asked for it at 300 DPI and it was like, I don't know, an A4 page.
Mm.
And so I did it all at 300 DPI and I sent it off, and they ended up liking it so much that they were like, okay, we want this blown up really big and put in our factories, and we'll pay you an extra amount of money for this.
And you would have to redo it because you're not using vectors.
Yes, I had to literally trace everything and redo it. And that was so annoying. But it was great to get this like reusage fee and everything. But I remember just kicking myself and, oh, this is so annoying. Why didn't I just do it? Why didn't I scan everything in at 600, and at least, so. But you just learn these things. It's a silly technical error.
So now you do all your work at 600?
Well, no, I don't really, because I mean, not generally for like editorial. And
right.
Stuff.
There's really no reason.
I did for a few years, and then sometimes it just really slows. My computer would just slow down
and the files are huge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just too big. But I mean, if it's something that I think, could be applied and made into posters at a later date, then sure, I'll work bigger, but.
See, you've done quite a few things with more, I guess, editorial clients like the New York Times, The New Yorker. You have many more. But do you work the same way if you're doing editorial versus something that has a longer timeline?
What do you mean the same way?
I guess for your work, I'm not. It looks like some of it is analog. And I guess I would think that for editorial where the timelines are much smaller, you might want to turn that process into more of a digital process, I guess. And so I was wondering if you do things differently depending on, like the type of commission you get.
Yeah, definitely. So actually my process has changed over the years. So when I got my first like sort of New York Times job or, in those first few years of getting those editorial jobs, I would literally do everything by hand and scan it in. And then, I would be literally tweaking an eyebrow, but then, like sort of drawing it on a bit of paper, redrawing it, scanning it in. And it just, the process was just so long and convoluted. And, when you're working to like a crazy time frame, it just didn't seem to make much sense. So actually, something that I've been using recently is the iPad.
Yeah.
And so for the for pretty much most of my editorial jobs now, I end up doing it on the iPad. And I never thought that would happen. I thought I would literally just be using it for like roughs. But then I ended up finding out that the Apple Pencil is on like Procreate, the 6B is just so true to life.
Yeah.
I scrap all the other brushes. I think most of them are like really like crap, but the 6B is so nice. And also, what is it? The other one that I really like is, I think it's the dry ink one. And I was like, okay, this is perfect. This looks just like, you know, because I would often like ink in silhouettes and shapes by hand, but, you know, just doing that on the iPad even is pretty much looks the same.
Quite amazing what they've managed to do with Procreate.
And
feels really good too to use. And then when you superimpose like more texture in Photoshop or something, it ends up looking just like something you drew.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the, you know, it's so easy. I can take it home. I can work in the evenings. I'm not like tied to my studio and my desk. And the other week I even ended up selling my Cintiq, which I know is I had a Cintiq, so I used to draw on that. But I don't know, the even though it can handle bigger files and things, I just much prefer the experience if I'm going to draw digitally, doing it on the iPad. But that's not to say I don't do things analog anymore. And I think if I have like a longer time frame or, you know, a bigger project, maybe, I would probably use a combination of like the iPad, like mapping in shapes, airdropping it, and then also drawing by hand and scanning that into Photoshop. Mm. So
do you still prefer to do it by hand, I guess, when you have more time or?
I think I do like doing things by hand. Oh, it's tricky now because I feel like with the illustration, I can get such a more like controlling the colors and having a really clean graphic look is so much easier doing it on the computer, doing it on the iPad. I kind of have to offset it by making my own work completely by hand. And then the two kind of feed in, like sort of influence each other. And it's nice to have a break from both. So yeah. I enjoy working, using both ways of working, really.
It looks like by hand, I guess you use a lot of different mediums, but how do you usually work by hand? Like, is there something you always go back to or?
When I'm doing like illustration work by hand, I pretty much work completely in black and white, and I use different papers for different textures.
Yeah.
And I have lots of different brushes, and I usually work in like a black gouache.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, I'll create sort of using different brushes, like different lines and textures, and then scan them in. And then for my own work, for the past few years, it's been watercolor.
Yeah.
So I've been working a lot in watercolor and adding in bits of gouache as well, because I don't know, I absolutely love watercolor, but the thing that always frustrates me is that, you know, it can look quite pale and at times insipid, and I do quite like my darks. So to get those like lovely velvety darks,
I like to use gouache.
Yeah, but I think combining them both is really great. Yeah.
And I guess they both show texture through quite well, much more than
definitely
like thicker, more opaque paints. Yeah.
What I love about watercolor is, you know, it's layering up. You can use quite a limited palette, but then by layering up colors, you know, you can make new colors, and you can have such this luminescent sort of glow. And I guess, it's interesting because I think that sort of idea of like layering up work also influences my digital work.
Yeah.
So I often like layer up colors and set it to multiply. And again, that's been inspired by screen printing and printmaking. So I really feel like all these ways of working like feed into each other.
Yeah, I could see that. And I don't know. For me, I mean, I'm not a very good watercolorist, and I've dabbled with it, but watercolor is really unpredictable to me. And I guess if you were to use that all the time, maybe when you get good at it, it isn't. But it feels like you could make a mark that just is wrong. Like there's like a watermark showing, or like suddenly the colors don't look the way that you expected them to when it dries. And that really would frustrate me if I was to use that for professional work. But I guess those things maybe get better as you become more experienced.
Definitely.
And when you do, I guess more painting, because you do paint, do you use like watercolors usually and gouache?
Yes. I mean, sometimes I'm like, oh, you know, I'd love to do like big, like paintings with oil, and like maybe I'll be taken seriously. And but it's funny, I get out the oil or I get out the acrylic, and then actually I always come back to watercolor, and it's because I love paper, and I just love the surface of paper, the texture, the effects that you can get with watercolor, the luminosity. But it's taken so long to figure it out, and it's probably in like the only last year or so that I'm like, yes, I think I'm getting somewhere now, and I actually like what I'm producing. But I mean, there were a few years of frustration for sure working
with watercolor.
It's not the easiest medium. It's a nightmare because, as you say, like it's completely unforgiving, and I work. In a quite controlled way with it, but it's really hard to, because in a way you want to be open to I don't know, sort of a few mistakes, but also you kind of like happy accidents and things, but then also you kind of have to like plan it a bit as well. But then because obviously you're working from light to dark, so it does it takes a bit of planning, but then you don't want to over plan it and then for it to just be boring or just really stilted. So I don't know, I find it's, and also it's just about the state of mind and how I'm feeling that day. So you know, I could try and paint for like a week and it's just the worst thing I've ever done, and then it'll suddenly, you know, I'll have an hour of it and it'll be amazing. So it's too unpredictable in that way to use it for commissions, I find,
especially editorial.
I would love to be able to, but I just, it would be too frustrating and annoying.
Yeah. So one of the things I noticed in your portfolio was that you've done a couple of book covers. You seem to have worked in publishing a little bit. And that's a realm that I know a little less about. Typically those projects, do they take a really long time? Like are they over a long period of time for like book covers, or is it something more like editorial in a way?
It's definitely longer than editorial, but generally in like making book covers, I would say really the actual work putting into it is really not very long, maybe 1 to 2 weeks sometimes at the most. But I think what can take a long time with book covers is that it has to go through a marketing team. I mean, they end up going like, you make a change and then they have to go and like the art director then has to take it to a meeting to get it okayed, and sometimes that back and forth can end up making the project turn into a month or two, or you know, so it can sort of, and then sometimes you think it's done and then you'll hear back, I don't know, 3 months later, oh, can we have this change, you know. So yeah, they kind of I really enjoy working on book covers, but yeah, they weirdly don't take that long to make, but I think the projects can kind of drag a little bit, like you might have to put in little bits of work here and there, you know, just to finish them off.
Yeah. So a lot of waiting and back and forth, and
definitely.
And you've also illustrated entire books. Was it just one, or there's a couple actually, right?
Yeah, I've done how many have I done? I think I've done 4 or 5, but some of them are mixtures of like there's a couple of sort of paperbacks that I've done where there's a lot of like black and white illustrations, but interspersed with, you know, it's like a novel, or there's a lot of text as well. And then more sort of children's full colour picture books.
Yeah,
I've done two of those. And then I'm working, I've just finished one for Lawrence King, which is going to be published hopefully this year, which is more sort of adult again. But yeah.
And then those take a long time, I imagine, right?
Yes, they take such a long time. And yeah, I have to pick those projects really, really wisely. And I have to feel very, very passionate about the project before I take it on. And this is because they are like, they completely take up like all my time. And I think pretty much every single book that I've done, it's weird, like, you know, you agree to a time frame and I get it done within that time frame. I always meet my deadlines, but they always overrun.
Yeah.
By months.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be frustrating at times, because you end up giving up other jobs because you're trying to meet this deadline and you're putting in all the hours, and then for it to only, you know, just be sort of delayed, and it doesn't work on a like economic, it's not economically very viable, because at the end of the day you end up sort of turning down other work. And and I find it quite a frustrating process, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like very rewarding to see your work in a book, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to sound ungrateful.
No, but I totally understand.
Yeah, it is. When you're trying to make a living from it, you know, I think the way that I figured is that I think books, I love working on them, but I think they should be probably a background project that goes on, and then I can take on other editorial work on top of it. And actually for the last book that I did, I had much better balance. I didn't turn down work. I took on other work, and the job did overrun like I thought it would. And yeah, it all worked out in the end. So I think... I just wish that art directors, rather, because they come to me and they go, oh, can we make this book? And we want it done in 3 months. And it's like 70 pages, you know, literally. And I'm like, can you just be a bit more realistic? Because we all know it's going to overrun by at least 6 months, because they always do. So if you just said that at the start, then I could like...
You could plan it better.
My time and actually make a living from it, you know, a better living from it. I'd love getting my teeth stuck into a book, but I must admit that has put me off quite a few projects.
Yeah. Do you set yourself a limit of how many you'll take in a year?
Not really. I think I just take each project as it comes and just weigh up the options. And I wouldn't work on more than one book at a time. I do like to, because the other thing is that you can't help, particularly when it's a big book project, just losing yourself in the work. You know, at the end of the day, and you're doing a job, and sometimes you're working on someone else's vision. And sometimes I have found at the end that I've been so burnt out and I've forgotten what my own work is about, and my own identity. And that is such an important part of me. And also it sort of affects my other illustration work, you know, my own artwork feeds into my commercial work. So I probably do, maybe would like to do just one a year, really. I think as long as it's the right project. Yeah.
Do you have, I guess, do you ever think about, I guess, writing your own book and illustrating it in that way? Because that would be quite different in a way. I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
That would be the dream.
Mm-hmm.
But I think before I never felt like particularly compelled to write necessarily for children.
But that's what you would like to write if you wrote a book that you,
I don't know. I think, I'm not sure. Like, I'm not sure what that story is. And,
Oh,
it's really hard. It may happen one day. At the moment, not at the moment.
Well, authoring and just writing a children's book is a whole thing unto itself.
I know. And also I've always worked sort of on nonfiction as well. Mm. With the picture books, they've mainly been nonfiction.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. It's got to be really, I'm going to have to think about it, but that would be amazing.
But it's something that you would like to maybe do in the future.
I think so. It's just, I've got to get the right idea and I don't want to do something just for the sake of it. I don't know. I'm such a slow burner. Like things take a long time to ideas sort of compost in my mind for a long time before, you know, there's an outcome.
Yeah.
I do mull over things a lot.
Yeah, but that's probably good as well. The book publishing industry, a lot of people, myself included, kind of think of it as closed off and a bit elitist, I guess, in that it's not particularly easy to start doing work for that kind of industry, I think. But how did you find yourself working for book publishers and stuff? Because you've done work with like Penguin and pretty big kind of publishers like that.
Well, again, like it was weird because I think pretty much, so it's really weird, like the way that my kind of career has gone, I got that first job, the Nokia job, and then literally I think like the second or third job I got was for Walker Books.
Wow.
And it was
okay.
Just the art director got in touch and just wanted me to illustrate this paperback of short stories by the writer David Armand, who was one of my favorite childhood writers, and it was just like amazing, like a dream come true. And I think again,
so it was kind of, it kind of fell onto you, like they just
fell
saw
into
something
my lap.
yeah
and I wish there was like something more like simple, like to say I got in touch, and I don't know, it feels like I kind of got lucky, and he, I think, well, it was weird because I think he saw that weird like drawing I did of the fish with the woman's head, and the book was called Half a Creature Under the Sea, and was all sort of fantastical and sort of semi-autobiographical, but also slightly magical short stories. So I don't know, I think he saw this image on my Tumblr and yeah, it sort of went from there. And then I'm trying to think with the other works, literally. Oh yeah. So, I have made quite a bit of work sometimes for, the New York Times Book Review. And I think that I was just thinking about it the other day, and I actually think working on that section, which is, it's probably my favorite section to work on. And it's quite interesting because I have had quite a few art directors from publishing houses get in touch because they've seen my work from that section, I suppose. So,
well, that makes so much sense the readership would be publishers, like book publishers and art directors from publishing houses are reading that section. Yeah.
And quite often if they're going to do like reprints or, you know, if I've illustrated an article about a book, they'll be printing that book in the UK or some, you know, doing a different reprint of it. And they'll go, oh, you know, it looks to me like they've probably typed it into Google image search or something.
Uh-huh,
and then
uh-huh.
My articles come up and they've gone, oh, can we reuse that or something? Or apply
that
to a book
sense.
Cover.
Yeah.
I have had a couple of instances where they've asked to do that. But it's never gone past the stage of, you know, the marketing stage for those ones. I don't know, because I think, again, it's so hard to get a book cover off the ground. It has to go through so many meetings, I suppose, because in a way it's got to sell, hasn't it? So, there's quite a few hoops that you've got to jump through.
And have you had quite a lot of those failed starts in that kind of sense?
I mean, not anything where I've, like, made work and it's been rejected, but I've had a lot of I do get a lot of emails, and then, you know, for books and book covers, and I would say, you know, a good amount of them just don't ever come to fruition.
Yeah. That's disappointing. So they go, oh,
It's kind of disappointing. Yeah. But it's, yeah, it wouldn't, I always just think, oh, it wouldn't have been right maybe for me, or, you know, that's okay.
Yeah. So, we're like quickly running out of time, but I know you recently did you were invited for an art residency by a very prestigious kind of cool program. It's called Varda Artists, and they had you living on a houseboat with your own studio, with other creatives too. I know that you, yeah. What was that like? I mean, it's just, it seems idyllic.
Yes, it was incredible. I don't even know like how long have I got to talk about it. I could go on for a long time. It was like nothing I've ever experienced. And yeah, I it was something I really needed to do. For a start, I just wanted to go away completely on my own into the unknown and, you know, sort of meet new people and have some different experiences for a couple of months. And yeah, it was like stepping into this amazing magical world, because you're kind of quite cut off. You're on this beautiful old wooden ferry boat with an amazing history of artists and writers that have lived there. It almost feels like this sort of holy kind of hallowed place, because it's got this Alan Watts sort of lived there full time, and then sort of people like Jack Kerouac and Maya Angelou came to stay. So and you know, we would sort of, I was living there with, you know, two or three girls. And the first month there were two other girls, and then the second month there were three other girls. And yeah, you just form really close friendships. You cook together. And it was just, you know, you have these like little routines every day, and because it's so quiet and peaceful and you haven't got anything distracting you, you sort of, yeah, it was a very productive time for me. I want to go and do more residencies, because this is the other thing. I never did a huge amount of traveling growing up. Didn't go abroad until I was 18, but I've always longed to do it. And I think I always traveled, kind of sounds a bit weird and hippie, but I would always escape into my work, or I would read, and that was like my form of traveling. Mm-hmm. And but like now that I'm in, you know, I can afford to maybe go and travel now, and I've established myself, I'm like, I don't think I could just take the time off. I want to turn it into something productive with my work. So, I mean, doing the residency was absolutely perfect for that.
And did you still work on commissions while you were like at the residency program?
Well, I did have to finish off this book that I was working on, I was quite lucky enough to get a couple of like relicensing jobs, which is so nice. And they don't often come in, and then they came in at like the perfect time. So it
That's
was just
great. Yeah.
Reusing old bits of work. And I did get a couple of commissions through, and I actually turned them down because I just know that it would eat into my time, and I could with those other jobs that came in, I could afford to
not take them. Yeah.
To not take them on, which is amazing. So yeah, and I also saved up, you know, for a good year beforehand to make sure that I would have enough. But really, my outgoings are very low, you know.
Yeah. What sort of things did you do while you were there?
So yeah, we'd go over into the city, which was, you know, 20 minutes on the bus or whatever.
Because it's in San Francisco, right?
Yeah. San Francisco. So the boat was in Sausalito, but then
okay,
you go over the water, and Yeah, like I just lots of art galleries, museums, and then I think we went up to, I think it's Sonoma in the wine country.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And like, and also in the second month, I did a lot more exploring. So sort of went to the Marin Headlands sort of art center, which like runs this amazing residency, and you're really out in the sticks there. There's pretty much no Wi-Fi or transport or anything. It's incredible. And then we explored some of the beaches as well. So yeah. It was dreamy. It feels like a dream, and it wasn't even that long ago, but it feels like another world, because, you know, coming from beautiful, warm California, it's like the light there is so golden.
Oh my God,
and,
it like, is. The shadows, yeah, I know.
Oh, it was so,
it's so beautiful.
It was so brilliant for my work. Like the shadows are so strong, and there's so many contrasts, and like, and the colors, like everything's just sun bleached, and like San Francisco has a, like particular beautiful sort of color palette with sage greens and like lovely soft orangey pinky reds, and then you know, so then to be there and then come back to the UK, and it's just
great,
kind of dark by 4 o'clock, you're in pitch black, you know, it's oh, so yeah.
Yeah, I've only ever been to LA, but I was struck also with how beautiful the light is there. I've never seen that anywhere else. It's really strange, but it's beautiful. And then I imagine that's why people are so obsessed with California sometimes.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I want to ask you before we like go into more like quick fire questions. I wanted to ask you if you could give illustrators and artists starting out today one piece of advice, what would you say to them?
I would say keep learning, keep interested and engaged. So go to exhibitions, watch films, read lots, sort of keep your mind really open. Don't close your mind off. Keep pushing your work forwards. I think it's too easy to sometimes become complacent and, you know, this is the way that I draw something or whatever. No, just, you know, you can. And I also, we put ourselves into these little sort of boxes. Or this is, as particularly in the illustration, I think it's a danger of, you know, well, this is our style. No, I can't draw a tree this way because this would look completely out of sync with how I work. And I think, no, don't hold yourself back. I think if you just keep your mind open and sort of be like a sponge, then you know, that it will so seep into your work or your influences, and it will be cohesive. But yeah,
and I suppose that's what makes your work exciting, I guess, is the fact that you really seem to enjoy it, you're exploring things, ultimately that does kind of get you clients, I think.
And you just have to keep growing, and you know, and that's the thing. There isn't like this thing, oh, I've got it now, and this is my style, and this is what I'm do. And no, you just keep growing and keep learning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's great advice. So I wanted to transition to kind of like smaller questions I usually like to ask at the end. Mm-hmm. My first question is, what inspires you? And that could just be anything really, but yeah, what inspires you to create most of the time?
Daphne du Maurier short stories, Fouillade's landscapes, moody like atmospheres, David Lynch films.
Yeah, film. Okay.
Cinema. Yeah. Cinema is a huge one. Yeah.
Okay. And what's your favorite thing about what you do?
The unknown and feeling like I can be in control of like my future and where I want to go, and up to a point but I don't know, they that sounds really conflicting, but it's exciting to
I think it's the freedom,
know,
right?
Come
the
into freedom my studio. The freedom, that's exactly coming into the studio every day and not knowing what the day's gonna hold.
Yeah, there's something really absolutely exciting. Glorious about that in a way. What's your least favorite thing about your job?
The bad budgets and being asked to work for free.
Oh, you still get asked that question?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's really? An insult. And also, I'm just getting asked to work for nothing as well.
For next to nothing.
Very, very low. Yeah. Next to nothing. All for free. Yeah. Yeah. It really upsets and angers me.
Yeah. So, and I have one final question for you. What do you often look to books for inspiration? And if so, like, are there books that you continually return to?
Yeah. Yeah. I read constantly. And yeah, there are books that I return to, and particularly, I think I mentioned earlier, like, Daphne du Maurier. She's an English, or she was an English writer, and it was weird because she was probably predominantly known for like these like romantic historical fiction, but actually she did the best short stories that were like really chilling, and her short stories have been made into films like The Birds and Don't Look Now.
Okay. I didn't know that. So
she's amazing. And yeah, a lot of writers. I love Deborah Levy, Jeanette Winterson, Philip Pullman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's my aim to read even more books this year. So I'm just listening to lots of books as well on audio. And
do you often use books as visual references, like books that have images, I guess?
Yeah, I used to, but now I suppose, I'm trying to like, because I do keep these like private Pinterest boards if I'm collecting like reference imagery, but I do miss the days back when it wasn't so easy to get hold of images online, like, of going to libraries and like photocopying and having it there physically in front of you is really nice. I have been trying to collect more like books on painting at the moment. And I prefer to have that sort of as a physical book in front of me. So,
because you experience it much differently, I think.
Oh God. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So I've got a lot of art books.
Are there painters that you are particularly interested in, or?
Yeah. There's this Swedish painter called Mamma Andersson, and she is just, I think she's one of my favorite painters. They're just really incredible, haunting. They have beautiful like landscapes. They have a sense of, there's like a narrative going on. She's really incredible painter. I like a lot of like older painters like Vuillard and Edvard Munch, landscape. This kind of like melting landscapes. I'm really into at the moment. And I'm just trying to think. Yeah, there's painters. Yeah, I really like Michael Armitage.
When
your head goes blank and you're like, oh.
No, I know. It can be hard to remember in the moment.
Oh, and Hockney obviously is amazing.
Hockney,
like the way that he applies, you know, his work to, he works in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing that I really like, working in a lot of different mediums. And yeah, you know, one minute it'll be colored pencil or printmaking or painting or the iPad, you know.
Well, Eleanor, I'm really glad that we got to talk, and I want to thank you for coming on and letting me interview you.
Oh, well, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. And that was my conversation with Eleanor Taylor. As always, you can find the detailed show notes for this episode, including links to all the books, resources, and artists we mentioned, on our website at illustrationhour.com/Taylor, or by clicking on the link in the description for this episode. If you enjoyed the show, let me know on Instagram, where I am at illustrationhour, or on Twitter, where I am at IHpod. And if you want to keep up with the show and get exclusive access to our weekly digest art club designed to help creatives thrive, head on over to illustrationhour.com/newsletter and subscribe. All right, that's it for this week. I will return in 2 weeks with a brand new interview and episode of the Illustration Hour. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good and creative week.